Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snack Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Once again, flying solo this week. Parker Fleming is slacking on the Grizzly Bear Blues podcast network. It's not like he's busy or anything. It's not like he has, you know, multiple shows that he makes appearances on throughout the week, but I guess I'll let him slide this time as he prepares for Memorial Day weekend trip. I hope he has fun. He picked a terrible time to go on vacation since the Grizzlies are hosting playoff basketball for the first time in four seasons. And we're going to talk about that and much more, of course, on this episode of GBB Live. Ways to get in touch with the show. You can follow us on Twitter at GBB Live. You can follow our blog, wonderful blog that Parker and I are fortunate enough to write for, that I, Joe Mullinax, am fortunate enough to be the site manager for, SB Nation's Grizzly Bear Blues at SBN Grizzlies. You can follow Parker on Twitter, again, not joining us this week, but hopefully be back next, at @Paka_Flocka. And of course, you can join me, if you want to join me on Twitter. I always say that, and I always wonder, do people really want to do that? But you can follow me if you'd like, at Joe Mullinax. It's a bold strategy, but it might pay off for you this time. We'll see how it plays out for you guys. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Stitcher, on iHeart, on Google, pretty much anywhere you can get a podcast. You can find GBB Live. You can find the Core Four. You can find 3&D. You can find the Starting Five. I had a vision for a podcast network, and that is exactly what we've established at GBB. Four unique shows, recording episodes weekly. Lots of good stuff to check out in addition to the site over at GBB. Make sure you're subscribing, rating, reviewing the GBB podcast network. My guest on this episode is one of the very best when it comes to talking about the Utah Jazz, especially when it comes to SB Nation. One of the best things about SB Nation is for just about every team, you have someone that you can talk to. Obviously, last week we talked to Brady Klopfer talking about the Warriors on the last episode. On this episode, we are welcoming the site manager for the Utah Jazz SB Nation blog, SLC Dunk. He has been featured on ESPN and Sports Illustrated. He has a YouTube page that you can subscribe to if you'd like. He does a lot of great content, of course, mostly revolving around the Utah Jazz. And he's kind enough to give us some time on this episode of GBB Live. His name is James Hansen, at Hansen James on Twitter. I believe it's not a coincidence, James, that your Twitter handle, when you say Hansen James quickly enough, it sounds like Handsome James. It's like you're fishing for compliments, sir.
It's a little bit. I don't mind when people make that mistake. It may be an actual literal mistake. I don't know how handsome I actually am, but I don't mind people saying my Twitter handle quickly.
It's leading people, right? You're trying to reach them, get them to that conclusion. You say the Twitter handle Hanson James, and you're like, Handsome James? And then you look at the picture like, oh, yeah, he is kind of handsome. So it's leading the witness, and I can appreciate that. So, James, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm a big fan of the work that you guys do over at SLC Dunk. And I'm, to be honest with you, and this is probably not something that I should say on a Grizzlies podcast, I'm a fan of the Utah Jazz. I am impressed with the way that that team kind of stayed the course after the way things played out in the bubble. It felt like they were kind of at a fork in the road where they could have decided to blow things up, maybe try to move on from Mike Conley after the rough season he had that very first year. Bogdanovich's contract looked a little bit rough given how things finished in that 2019-2020 season. But the Jazz doubled down. They brought Derek Favors back. I know he's a favorite of Utah fans. And they pretty much stayed the course with their core guys. And they were rewarded for it. They are, in terms of regular season record, the very best team in the NBA. They are the number one seed in the playoffs in the Western Conference. And all these vibes were good until Donovan Mitchell got hurt. And all these vibes were good until the Memphis Grizzlies won two games to get into the play-in or through the play-in to get into the playoffs. And they shocked the world on Sunday. So I feel like I'll lead off with this, James. It seems like it was a bit of a roller coaster ride for you guys. You've had the highest of highs. I mean, you know Utah Jazz history better than me, but even with Stockton and Malone, I think it's probably fair to say that this is the most successful regular season in the history of the Utah Jazz. And then with that comes championship expectation. And of course the Lakers and the Clippers still exist. And, you know, there's going to be challenges along the way, but I think when you're the number one seed, it's fair to expect an NBA finals appearance. And you go from that to Sunday when the Memphis Grizzlies somehow, some way, and we can talk a little more about it, but you get knocked off in that first game by the eighth seed. That seems like again, that the highest of highs and the lowest of lows.
Are you just trying to hurt my feelings? Or?
Well, we're eventually going to get to game two, obviously. We're progressing, James. We're progressing. The story's going to pick up for you guys. But that Sunday night game, I obviously, you know the fan base better than me. What was the feeling among Utah Jazz fans after the Memphis Grizzlies, Dylan Brooks in particular, just kind of came out and punched you guys in the mouth?
It was the worst. I just kind of going off of what you said earlier, to be a Utah Jazz fan is to know sadness at a lot of times. You mentioned Stockton Malone. Of course, we had the expectations back then. They end with Michael Jordan. We had with Deron Williams, you had that one season where they ended up going to the Western Conference Finals, but ended up getting swept by the Spurs. And then, of course, that ended terribly with a quick trade and Jerry Sloan getting, retiring abruptly and then now to this. But it just feels like there's just never really a high. And, you know, I also wanted to say I actually am a big fan of the Grizzlies, too. They're a team that in a lot of ways they're on kind of parallel paths that the Jazz have been on. Obviously, we are connected with the Mike Conley trade, but you've got like a team that feels like they've done things the right way. They've made smart moves. They're in a market that doesn't get a ton of attention or attention that it probably deserves with a young star guard. Both teams kind of have that thing going for them. So I kind of root for the Grizzlies too, but yeah, going back to what you said, what it felt like to lose in the first game, it was the worst. And you compound not only losing, but some sort of strange behind the scenes controversy going on with Donovan Mitchell and the health staff. And there was rumors flying all over the place about what was going on. And you have apparently Donovan Mitchell has his own health team that he's working with because he doesn't trust the Jazz's health team. And Donovan now trusts his own health team more than the Jazz, and some sort of conflict there. It just was terrible. And then the Jazz come out and the Grizzlies look like the tougher team. They look like the team that is tougher mentally. They look like a team that's ready to go from the whistle. And the Jazz looked kind of shell-shocked a little bit. They didn't look mentally tough. They turned the ball over. It was terrible. And you got to give credit to the Grizzlies. They came out and they were not afraid. And they were in, you know, Salt Lake City, which is renowned for being a super loud and rowdy and rough environment, and they were not afraid and they beat the Jazz. And so you have all these things with the Jazz where you have likely defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert, three all-stars, you know, two six men of the year candidates, coach of the year candidate. And just like that, home court advantage is gone because they love. So it's right. Just, it was not ideal. And it, the Grizzlies, there's a lot to be excited about, and it's not a team that the Jazz should take like lightly in any sense. Ja Morant has done nothing but just be electric on the floor and just command that Grizzlies team like he's been doing this for a decade. It's not a team that the Jazz should take lightly at all. And they found out that the hard way in game one.
And that is important to point out, because obviously without Donovan Mitchell, the Jazz are not as good. And we'll get to game two and you'll get to be a little bit more cheery here in a moment. But in game one, the Jazz were still, I believe it was 10-6 without Mitchell going into that game. And the Jazz, I think the biggest shift for them, and correct me if I'm wrong on that, for just from my own research, is when you have to start Ingles instead of him coming off the bench. You know, that is easily, I mean, the sixth man of the year finalist listings drove that home. Ingles and Jordan Clarkson are easily the best 1-2 punch off the bench in the NBA. And when you take one of those guys away, it negates a strength of the Jazz and what has become recently a weakness of the Grizzlies, which is their bench. Now, that hasn't always been the case. In fact, throughout the regular season, the Grizzlies bench was the strength. De'Anthony Melton looks like he's forgotten to play basketball these last few weeks. You have, you know, struggles with Tyus Jones and Xavier Tillman. Grayson Allen looked terrible in game two, which we'll come to in a moment. You know, it really is, when you watch that first game, the Jazz looked like they weren't expecting the Grizzlies to come out and fight the way they did. But that's kind of surprising, because obviously the Utah Jazz have Grizzlies legend Mike Conley on the team. You mentioned that trade, which looks a heck of a lot better now than it did last year. You mentioned Mike making his first All-Star team, deservedly so, by the way. And it's wonderful to see Mike play the way that I knew he was capable of. I believe we talked about that on one of your guys' shows. I was on there with Michael, I believe, and we talked about how Mike Conley was going to be very much worth it. And I'm sure people were very angry with me a year after that, looking like Mike Conley was washed, but he is very much not washed. And he's actually played pretty well in these first two games, both of them. Even the game that Utah lost, Conley did some good things. I think that the fascinating thing when watching the Jazz without Donovan Mitchell is they don't have anybody who can create their own shot consistently. And that's kind of surprising when you think about it, because, you know, Bogdanovich can somewhat do it, but he's obviously older. He's not quite as fleet of foot as he was in the past. Jaren Jackson Jr. can stick him relatively well in the half court. Bogdanovich forced some shots. And obviously in the second half of that first game, it worked. He was red hot, but especially in the first half, that he wasn't fully there offensively. And he kind of put the Jazz
in a hole. He was that first half. He had 0 points. He had 4 turnovers. It was a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with him that game.
But obviously Utah needed him, especially with Mitchell out. So I think that that first game, to me, the biggest things that Memphis did well, and I wrote about this for the blog, was they defended the three, which the Grizzlies did not do in game two, which we'll talk more about here in a moment. And they played essentially even between Valanciunas and Gobert. I think you can go back and forth and say Jonas may have gotten some, maybe he won the round on points in game one. But at the very least, Jonas, who is a very good NBA center, needs to play tight with one of the best NBA centers. You know, Gobert, unfortunately for him, is in an era where Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid exist. Otherwise, Rudy would be the undisputed best center in the NBA. He's probably third behind those two guys. And it's really interesting to watch how Jonas is one of the very few bigs who can hang with Gobert in terms of his physical presence and the way that he plays. Jonas has the frame. He's able to take it right at Gobert, which he did successfully in game one. And from watching the game, James, obviously, aside from Mitchell not playing, to me, the two things that Memphis did best were defend the three, because Utah was ice cold. They shot about 25%, which is very unlike them. But at the same time, it's not like they were missing a bunch of wide open shots. Memphis was contesting a lot of those threes. And then Jonas playing Gobert, I think, fairly to a draw. Again, Gobert did some good things. I think he out-rebounded Jonas. But at the same time, Jonas was 7-for-14. I think Gobert was 4-for-4. So it really was, in that first game, a tale of the best Jazz player not being better than his individual matchup in that particular game, and the Grizzlies defending the three especially well. Is there anything that stood out to you beyond that in game one that Memphis won? Again, aside from the obvious that Donovan Mitchell didn't play.
Yeah, so it's, you're right. The Jazz do have a winning record without Mitchell, and I think it's a little bit of a, it's kind of a credit to their depth, because they do have a lot of talent and they do have 2 6-man-of-the-year candidates. So their bench is really solid. And like you said, when Donovan Mitchell's out, it does move Joe Ingles up to that starting lineup, and they lose a little bit of the depth. it's interesting. They have a little bit of a trade-off when they do that. They're actually probably a little bit better defensively when Donovan Mitchell sits, just because Ingles has size. And it's, you know, defensively, you're just a little bit better when you just have that many big bodies and that much length. But it's offensively, they really struggle, because you have a team, you know, you have the Grizzlies in this series, who I believe are the youngest team in the playoffs in like the last 10 years, I think they've said. Just a young team with a lot of young athletes, especially Ja Morant. With Utah, you've got lots of like skill, lots of shooting ability, lots of talent, but you've got guys like Bojan Bogdanovic, he's early 30s. You've got Mike Conley, early 30s. Joe Ingles, early 30s. When you don't have Donovan Mitchell on the floor, the Jazz start to look very unathletic.
Right.
And, you know, so they can get away with that a little bit from time to time. And they did in the regular season, because Gobert's defense is so, so good. And you can kind of manufacture points with lots of efficiency and things like that. But
right,
the Jazz get a little easier to guard when they don't have Mitchell, because there's just no one on the team. I mean, Mike Conley here and there, he's got quickness and he can do that. But really, outside of, like, you know, occasionally Jordan Clarkson can drive, you just don't really have anyone that can penetrate and bend the defense. And so it allows opposing teams to really cover that 3-point line better. That's really just one of the things that happens. And so, yeah, Bojan Bogdanovic had a better second half, but, you know, there just wasn't, and you could see it on the Grizzlies. Like, there wasn't really anyone they were really afraid of. Like, they're not really afraid of Bojan Bogdanovic. They're not really afraid of Joe Ingles, like, driving to the hoop and cramming it like a, you know, like Donovan or Ja right. can do. And so it allows them to kind of play a little bit more aggressively without fear of having a, you know, it's like you can cover that 3-point line a lot harder without fear of them driving to the hoop. And the Grizzlies did a good job. They were very disciplined. Dylan Brooks had a monster night. He was able to guard. Dylan Brooks, you know, outside of Donovan Mitchell, can just really guard everyone else on this Jazz team. And so if the Jazz don't have that guy that can kind of penetrate and bend the defense, you're then relying on players just really shooting lights out from three. And sometimes the Jazz have enough shooting talent that they can do that. And that's why they went like 10-6 without Mitchell. But, you know, in the playoffs, it's a different animal, and you've got teams playing at a different intensity. And the Grizzlies, I have to say, I'm just impressed with the Grizzlies' demeanor, because they really did come out with a better demeanor that first game. I actually felt like the Jazz, you know, they just didn't come out looking ready to go. And maybe it was because things went on with Mitchell that, you know, kind of threw everyone off. But
right.
You would think a team of veterans would come out a little more, you know, with a better, just better energy. Like you've mentioned with Valanciunas, I like watching Valanciunas. He's one of those old school, you know, big body centers that kind of can do a lot of different nice things for the team. He's big. He uses his size really well. He's really physical. Mm-hmm. And Rudy Gobert has gotten better at guarding guys like that. But Valanciunas really got the better of Rudy in game one. I mean, when Donovan Mitchell doesn't play, you need Rudy Gobert to have a monster night. And
right.
And things were called really tight, and Rudy just did not play very disciplined that first half, and it got him into foul trouble. He didn't adjust, and Jonas, you know, took advantage of it. You got to give credit to Jonas. He recognized the situation. He got Rudy Gobert in foul trouble, and Rudy only played 24 minutes that game. And, you know, you said it was kind of a wash, but I would say Jonas kind of got the better of him. I was just
trying to be unbiased. He totally got the better of him.
he totally did. Cause that's the thing. If the Jazz are not going to have Donovan Mitchell, they really have to win with their defense. But the Jazz don't have, you know, if you look at the Jazz and the Grizzlies, who are you considering the best wing defender? It's probably Dylan Brooks.
Right.
You know, it's Royce O'Neal's probably number two, I guess. You know, so, but the Utah really relies on Rudy Gobert, and that's, you know, and I'm guessing GBB fans aren't watching the Jazz every night, but one of the things the Jazz do, and their defense is based on, is they know they have Rudy Gobert, who is just an incredible defender, and it's allowed them to put players on the team that aren't typically known for their defense. You're able to go out and have Bojan Bogdanovic and Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell and all these shooters on the floor that, you know, Mike Conley is a solid defender, and actually his advanced numbers are pretty decent this year. He's like, and I think he's always been a really solid defender, but he's, you know, Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley together, it's a little undersized, and Donovan Mitchell does sometimes leave a little lacking in the defensive end. Bojan Bogdanović is not a great defender by any means. And so the Jazz can get away with it with Rudy Gobert, but if Rudy Gobert is off the floor and Jonas Valanciunas, you know, beats him up and you have these bad defenders, it's bad news.
Yeah, no doubt. And Jonas definitely was he beat up on Gobert in that first game. I was just trying to be nice.
He did.
But I think that the biggest thing that made me nervous about that game, and this ties into our next part of the conversation with game two perfectly. And before I get to that, we're talking with James Hansen at Hansen James on Twitter. He's a site manager for SLC Dunk, the great Utah Jazz blog for SB Nation. Make sure you're following them at SLC Dunk. Of course, you are listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinex, flying solo once again, without my co-host Parker Fleming, but James and I are having a great chat. We just finished up talking about game one. And the perfect segue into game two is Dylan Brooks, because what made me nervous about game two, and I had a chance to go on local Memphis radio before the game on Wednesday, and they asked me who I thought was going to win, and I said Utah was going to win. And again, usually fan blogs are supposed to be a little bit more leaning towards the team, but I try, especially in a smaller market. I know you can relate to that. You know, a lot of people depend on GBB for coverage beyond just, you know, fanboying out. So I try to be unbiased. And I thought that the fact that Utah shot as poorly as they did in game one and still only lost by three, I thought that Dylan Brooks, who only five times in his NBA career of over 240 games scored over 30 points on 50% shooting. He scored 30 points before, but it's a lot less efficient. So it's very rare for him to be that efficient of a scorer. And I knew Donovan Mitchell was coming back. And all of those factors led me to think that Utah was probably going to take game two, which was okay. The Grizzlies had already gotten the split. They had home court advantage at that point. And I one of the things that made me smile, because it made me think of the old grit and grind playoff rivalries, was every time that Dylan Brooks touched the ball in Utah, he was booed out of the building. So, James, I'm going to give you the floor here, and I'm going to allow you to explain why you, I'm assuming you, but maybe a larger you of Jazz fans, hate Dylan Brooks so much.
Oh, it doesn't take a lot to incur the wrath of Jazz fans. I mean, there's a lot of fans out there that are very notorious, but Jazz fans are notoriously, I guess, sensitive is the word, and then very loud about their sensitivity. and you know, Jazz fans were frustrated in game one. I mean, I was frustrated. I couldn't believe that this team, the number one seed, came out and looked as just bad as they did in the first half. And Dylan Brooks and you know, and Desmond Bane came out, and they were just, I mean, they just punked the Jazz. They just punched them in the mouth, like you said, and they laughed about it. And the Jazz just didn't really respond. You know, they just kind of, and so you know, the Jazz fans see that, and they just, you know, it hurts to see the Jazz lose. Jazz fans are angry about, you know, what's going on with Donovan Mitchell and all that. And also Dylan Brooks just is a really good villain. Like, he just is
the villain for a reason. He's very good at that. One of the best things about Dylan Brooks, and again, I want to credit Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian for pointing this out. I've noticed it before, but I've never said it. Chris nailed it. You're probably familiar with Tony Allen of the last great iteration of the Grizzlies with Grit and Grind. Tony would do crazy stuff all the time. Tony was the guy that, it was the middle of a halftime performance in Golden State, and he just randomly walked into the middle of the performance, like not even completely oblivious to the dancers around him. You know, he's the guy that kicked Chris Paul in the face, like all that stuff. And Tony was chaos. Tony was the dog chasing the car that wouldn't know what he would do if he caught it. Right. Dylan is that for this iteration of the Grizzlies, but with a very big caveat. Tony was just being Tony. I don't believe that Tony had malice. I don't believe that Tony was a calculated mind. I think Tony's a brilliant defender, one of the very best perimeter defenders in the history of the NBA, but I don't think that he was going out and walking in front of those dancers to prove a point. Every single thing that Dillon Brooks does is calculated. Every single thing. And you mentioned that he's a villain, and that's what makes him the perfect villain for the other 29 teams in the NBA. Grizzlies fans, who a lot of them wanted to trade him when the season started, a lot of them now love him dearly because of the fact that he is willing to be that dude. And in good times and in bad, Dillon Brooks is going to be that dude. And it's oddly refreshing that you can count on a Dillon Brooks contested mid-range jumper. You can count on Dillon Brooks to foul too much. He leads the NBA in fouls over the last two seasons. He is a constant in an otherwise unconstant or chaotic world. He is someone that you know exactly what you're going to get. And that is, to me, the brilliance of Dillon Brooks, that he knows exactly what he's doing. And it worked in game one, didn't work as well in game two. The Jazz obviously were very much on to Dillon's physicality, and they picked on him in that way. And I think that it got Brooks out of his game. He was frustrated. He was efficient scoring again, but he was nowhere near the defensive force that they need him to be successful. The Jazz made 19 threes in game two. If Utah makes 19 threes consistently, they're going to win this series running away. Memphis won't win another game. I'm hopeful going to Memphis, they'll correct some of those issues with the three-point defense. But from your viewing of the game in game two, Dillon Brooks was a major factor in game one, so much so, in fact, that Jazz fans now almost universally hate him. But he was not that in game two. They talked about focusing on him offensively as an offensive scorer. To me, it looked like that was a bit of a smokescreen, and they really prioritized getting him off the floor in foul trouble, knowing Taylor Jenkins' rotation philosophy. Coach Jenkins believes in foul trouble, not others in Memphis media don't believe in foul trouble. You keep your best players out there and do the best you can. But, you know, he got Dillon Brooks off the floor and out of his game. So do you think there was a conscious effort? I guess it's pretty obvious there was, but especially with Donovan being there, Donovan's a tough cover for Dillon. And I think that Dillon was not in a place to be able to be allowed to be aggressive the way that he needs to be able to negate some of what a Mitchell can do.
Yeah. I mean, Dillon Brooks in the first game was really good. And one thing that, you know, I appreciate with Dillon Brooks, like, you know, we're both guys that have been watching this game for a long time, and sure, I've written about a lot of villains in the past, like Tony Allen and all these different guys. But you know what? You've got to appreciate someone like Dillon Brooks in a playoff game like this, because he's bringing an energy and just like a toughness to your team that kind of emanates to everyone else. And so for a team that's as young as the Grizzlies are, with like second year John Morant and all these young guys on the floor, I mean, You've got so many young guys on the Grizzlies, like Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane's a rookie. Having a guy like Dillon Brooks, who is unafraid and is willing to be like that first guy in the scrum and fighting with the Jazz's best players, I mean, that just gives just energy and, you know, maybe it's a over the top word, but courage to other guys on the floor that they're not afraid to like go out and be tough as well. And so I think having that demeanor for the Grizzlies, having Dillon Brooks kind of bring that energy and that like fight and fearlessness and villainy, that helps everyone on the Grizzlies out. Now, you know, it worked really well in game one. I think game two was just showed you that, you know, some of the issues that the Jazz have with John Morant, the Grizzlies are going to have with Donovan Mitchell. Both of them are, I mean, Donovan Mitchell and John Morant are two of the most elite athletes in the NBA. They are just both of them. I mean, both of them can just blow by their man and get to the rim almost at will. And, you know, for as much as like Royce O'Neal struggles to defend John Morant, I think Dillon Brooks is just going to struggle with Donovan Mitchell, just because it doesn't mean Dillon Brooks isn't a good defender, because he is a good one. It's just that Donovan Mitchell is such an elite athlete, kind of like John Morant. And it's just, so for the Grizzlies to guard Donovan, they're going to have to be really good in their rotations, because every time I've seen the Grizzlies play the Jazz, Donovan is typically pretty, I mean, Dillon will fight, and he's never going to give up, and he's going to give his all every single play. And that's one of the reasons you got to love Dylan Brooks. If you're a Grizzlies fan, if you're a Jazz fan, you hate his guts, but, but you know, 3 out of 4 possessions, Donovan is typically going to be able to get by him. And so for the Grizzlies, if they want to beat the Jazz, they're going to have to be really tight in their rotations. Like when Donovan Mitchell blows by Dylan Brooks, is Valanciunas able to get up and stop the layup? And then if Valanciunas moves up to stop Donovan Mitchell, is the help side defender going to rotate correctly? You know, and the Grizzlies are really young. Maybe they can do that, or maybe some of that lack of experience will show. I guess we'll see. But game two, you know, I think it was just Grizzlies' first taste of Donovan Mitchell in the playoffs. I think they, you know, I doubt they forgot. I think it's just a matter of, you know, it's just a fact. Donovan Mitchell is an elite talent in the NBA. And it's just, those guys are just really hard to guard. Just like the same thing with John Morant for the Jazz. Like, he's just a problem, and you've just got to be so good on the periphery, basically,
right?
To overcome the fact that you're playing a guy that's just an insanely good athlete that combines that with insane talent. They're both, you know, they're different players, but they both bring that same intense athleticism.
I think that's a great way to put it. And obviously Utah with those 19 threes, even with the Grizzlies roaring back and getting it within a score there late in the third quarter into the fourth quarter, Utah was just too good, and they pulled away and got the double digit victory. So the series is tied 1-1 heading into a wonderful Memorial Day weekend in Memphis. Grizzlies fans are excited. They're looking forward to the opportunity to be back in the grindhouse and have a chance to watch this team play playoff basketball for the first time in 4 seasons. When we come back, we're going to preview games 3 and 4 for the Memphis Grizzlies against the Utah Jazz back in Memphis. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to GBB Live with James Hansen of SLC Dunk. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is GBB Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax, joined by my buddy over from SLC Dunk, the great SB Nation Utah Jazz blog, James Hansen, at Hansen James on Twitter. In the first segment, we talked about games 1 and 2, why Utah fans hate Dylan Brooks, how Jonas Valanciunas punked Rudy Gobert in game 1, all those fun things. And now we have a series. You know, the saying goes that it's not really a series until the visiting team wins. And starting in game 1, we had a series. The Memphis Grizzlies technically have home court. I don't know that anybody thinks that Memphis is going to win both of these games, but we'll talk more about that at the end of this segment. But I'm curious, going into game 3, James, obviously Utah had an almost full arena. You'll know the exact numbers better than me in terms of what the Jazz allowed into the arena for games 1 and 2 in terms of attendance. It's been a bit of a hubbub in Memphis. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, James, but the Grizzlies are only going to have about 55%, maybe a little more than 55%. So I think it's around 10,000 fans is what they're expecting in FedEx Forum this weekend. And that's less than obviously what Utah had. And that's less than even what down I-40 in Tennessee, the Nashville Predators have for their current NHL playoff series. So this was a local decision. Obviously, there's still a pandemic going on. I think it's fairly safe to say we're on the downward slope of it, but there's still fingers crossed. Sure. But again, the vaccine's working and the numbers are lower than they have been at any point. So I think it's fair to be optimistic, but we're not done yet. And Memphis is being cautious with those numbers. I'm curious, from watching that game, from watching those fans, obviously numbers do and don't matter, because I think the 10,000 folks that are going to be in that building are going to make plenty of noise. But I'm curious as to your take on, and again, I'm not asking for your opinion on, you know, how the COVID response, goodness gracious, that is a firestorm I have no interest in. It's more about how valuable do you think it was for Utah? Because again, Utah lost game 1.
Yeah.
It's not like the Jazz fans were anything there. Right. That's what I'm with you. So and that leads to my question, are Grizzlies fans overvaluing that? Are Grizzlies fans getting frustrated? Because we are pretty good at that. We're good at getting mad at things that aren't necessarily all that important. Are we overvaluing the idea of having those numbers Because like I said, the Grizzlies went into Utah in game one, one of the toughest places to play in the NBA. Utah was 31-5, I believe, going into that game at home that season. And the Grizzlies won. So how much should Grizzlies fans care that they will not have as many people from the Jazz perspective? Because you guys had those two home games. You had more fans than Memphis will have. And again, we're sitting here talking about a split between the 1-8 series.
You know, and I guess I have a two-part answer. The Jazz, I think, had 13,000 plus or something like that. It was, I think it was like 70% capacity.
Okay.
So it was more. I don't think it was like that. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows how many 3,000 right. fans, how much sound that does. But like you said, in game one, it didn't really matter. And that game one just still, it hurts my feelings because the Jazz fans were like, they were so loud and it did not seem to matter too much for that Jazz team. They, regardless of the fans, they still came out and just didn't produce. And so, you know, the 10,000 fans or whatever they have for the Memphis Grizzlies, I think it does matter. I think it does provide lift because I feel like outside of a few players on the Jazz just have not been mentally tough this series. They were a little better last game, but I think that was because Donovan Mitchell brought that energy that they were missing. I think the fans in Memphis can give a boost to the Grizzlies and help them because I think the Grizzlies, you looked at that first quarter in game two, the Grizzlies to me looked a little deer in the headlights. Mitchell's making threes. The crowd is insane. It's, you know, a lot of these Grizzlies players first time being in a playoff environment.
And Mitchell was giving it back to them. Like you said, in game one, the Jazz just kind of took it, you know, like the Desmond Bane 3-point shot where he just stares down Yang and looks at him just, with the gooseneck
and talked all sorts of
right.
smack
and nothing happened. Literally nothing happened in the wake of that. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in the first 5 minutes of the Jazz game on game two, Donovan Mitchell, I think, got Dylan Brooks 2 fouls and he was talking to him the entire time and telling mm-hmm. him, you can't defend me. You're going to foul me and you're going to foul out of this game. Probably using some more choice words than that.
Polite words, I'm sure.
Sure. So I do think there was definitely a different energy that Mitchell brought to the game that at least he was willing to punch back and obviously effectively.
Yeah, I think I you know, how much it helps, I don't know. But I think it will help a young Grizzlies team that I think this is a lot of their first experience in the playoffs. It's just a different environment in the playoffs. It's just louder. Every possession is more, just matters more. You've got everyone's playing their best players as much as they possibly can. Although sometimes I wonder if Quinn Snyder realizes we're in the playoffs, but
common ground with Grizzlies fans. We're going to talk about Grayson Allen here in a moment. You guys, I'm sure you'll embrace that conversation.
Oh my heavens. Does Quinn Snyder know you can play Rudy Gobert more than like 34, 35 minutes? Sometimes I wonder if he knows that. I don't know.
Does Taylor Jenkins know that you don't have to play Grayson Allen at all?
Yeah, good question. There's a few times with the Jazz.
It was very clear that the Utah Jazz were keenly aware when Grayson Allen was on the floor and they attacked him aggressively. As well, yeah. They should. I would have done the exact same thing.
Yeah. So I think the crowd, you know, it's funny because I'm just fatalistic as a Jazz fan. Like, you know what? Maybe the Jazz will wilt under the Grizzlies crowd fan noise and not bring that toughness again. I think Donovan Mitchell is not necessarily just the talent, which is obviously the most important thing, but I think just his energy helps this Jazz team. They feed off of it. The Jazz don't have a tough guy anymore like the Grizzlies do with Dylan Brooks. Ingles is kind of that guy a little bit, but you know, if they used to have Jay Crowder and he used to kind of be that guy for them. 5 years ago, it was Trevor Booker. He was the guy that used to be willing to get in the scrums. The Jazz just don't have that. And so having Donovan Mitchell helps with that energy. And I think the Jazz will probably take one of these two games, but I think the Grizzlies are going to win it. I don't think the Grizzlies are losing both these games. I think the crowd noise will help the young Grizzlies players be comfortable, give them that energy. Like, because if Donovan Mitchell comes out and has another monster game, or let's say Rudy Gobert just has one of those stretches where it just looks like no one can score. If the Grizzlies have that fan noise, I think it will kind of galvanize them and help them get through some of those stretches.
I can tell you that Memphis is excited to have them back.
I'm sure.
It's going to be pretty cool to see on TV. Again, just the energy in that city. I lived in Memphis from 2011 to 2014, and the energy in that city when the team is in the playoffs is unparalleled. It really is special, and I'm very excited for Memphis. It's been a few years to have that opportunity once again is going to be really cool. Looking at game 3 and 4, again, one of the nice things about this series being split is we've seen what it'll take for Memphis to win, and we've seen what it'll probably take for Utah to win. Because we have to keep in mind, yes, the Grizzlies won game 1, but they did so with the Jazz shooting 25% and only losing by 3. In game 2, to be fair, the Jazz made 19 threes, shot almost 15% from beyond the arc, and the Grizzlies got it down to within one possession. Mm-hmm. So that double-digit score that does the end of game 2 is not indicative of how close that game actually was. So heading into game 3 and 4, I think I agree with you, and we can kind of, you know, cut to the chase with the GVB Live question of the day that I was going to end the show on. I think it's highly unlikely that either team wins 2 games in Memphis. But in order for the Jazz to get 1-2 victories, in order for the Jazz to not get swept in this little 2-game series in Memphis, what do the Jazz need to do? Obviously, game 2 serves somewhat of a blueprint, but you'd imagine the Grizzlies will be a little bit better prepared. What's the counterpunch? What is the next thing after watching as much Jazz basketball as you have that you think the Jazz will do in game 3, especially to try to put the foot back down on the Grizzlies and push them back down to reality of being the 8 seed in the series?
I think this is really the difference in game 1 is for Utah. It's just Rudy Gobert cannot get in foul trouble again. Like he cannot let Jonas Valanciunas destroy him like he did in game 1. He has to be on the floor because Donovan Mitchell is, honestly, the Jazz are kind of this yin yang team where you've got Donovan Mitchell is the offensive leader and Rudy Gobert is the defensive leader. But if Rudy Gobert raises the floor for the Jazz very high, and he gives the Jazz an opportunity to win every game they're in because of just his ability to keep them in games. But if Rudy Gobert is not on the floor, you'll see a lot. I mean, Quinn Snyder played him. He went into the fourth quarter having played like, I think it was 24 minutes. And I was looking at the box score, just shaking my head like, Quinn, every single time Rudy Gobert sits, the Grizzlies, it's like when you're trying to lead your dog along and you lead a hot dog out in front of your dog and let
right.
it. That's kind of what happens to the Grizzlies. They're like, oh my goodness, I am going to attack Derek Favors.
Like Grayson Allen.
Yeah. And so when Rudy Gobert sits, the Grizzlies just look like they're ready. They just attack the rim ferociously, and Utah Rudy Gobert needs to stay on the floor as much as they can. Quinn Snyder needs to be playing Rudy Gobert 40 minutes a game. He just has to. This is the playoffs, and the Jazz have lost home court advantage, like you said. I could see the Grizzlies winning 2 games, and that would be disastrous for Utah. I mean, you can't afford to lose. I mean, obviously you've got to win 4 out of 7, but if you have Rudy Gobert off on the floor for only like 34 minutes or something like that, that is terrible. So Rudy Gobert is really the key for Utah. He needs to stay on the floor. Donovan Mitchell's probably number two, because we saw in game 2 what he does and how he really takes the Jazz offense to another level. They're not going to shoot 48% from 3 again, I'm guessing. I mean, you never know. They do have a lot of good shooters, but 48% from 3 is pretty crazy.
Their average was 39 during the regular season. So again, yeah, they shot that poorly in game 1. They shot that hot in game 2. I think it's fair to assume that they'll be around that 40% number in game 3.
Yeah. So if they can shoot 38% from 3 or in that area, at least that amount. And then the thing is the Grizzlies, this is going to be an incredible series for Ja Morant. Like, I'll tell you Grizzlies fans right now, he's going to have an incredible series. And one thing is, whether the Grizzlies win or not, Ja Morant is coming out of this with the best storylines, because Utah just cannot guard fast guards. They just can't. It just, every you know, if you watch Utah, they just struggle with these super athletic guards like Ja Morant. Utah could not guard Jamal Murray in the playoffs last year. He just did whatever he wanted and found like a comfort level. And so Ja Morant is going to get his. He just is. Like, the Jazz have to find ways to slow him down as best they can. But he's going to just to score. And so the Jazz have to do other things. They got to find a way to like keep Dylan Brooks from shooting 10 for 14 from the field. And they've got to continue to keep other players from shooting a high percentage. Like, Utah did a pretty good job outside of guarding Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks of guarding everyone else. Like, they kept those guys in check. And that's the Rudy Gobert effect, because when Rudy Gobert is on the floor, the Jazz defenders can really stay out and over protect the 3-point line.
Sure.
But Utah still, I mean, they're going to have to figure, they've got to try to slow Ja Morant down. I don't know how. They have yet to prove to me that they can really slow any elite one in the game down. So, you know, I actually feel like Ja Morant needs to get a little bit of the Steph Curry treatment at this point. Utah's done some things in the past. Like, there was a game this year where they were guarding the Hawks with Trae Young, and they basically just did everything to get the ball out of his hands.
Right.
And I don't want to slander Quinn Snyder anymore. I know everyone talks to him about Coach of the Year, and he is a great coach. I don't know from my point of view if he's Coach of the Year, but anyways, that's another story.
I understand.
But one thing I do like that Quinn Snyder started doing this year is he has done some things where he will double team a guard even beyond half court line. And I wonder if here's a prediction. I wouldn't be surprised if the whole Jazz game plan in game three is get the ball out of Ja Morant's hands. Cause they did that to Trae Young and it worked really well. They did that against the Warriors with Steph Curry. They held Steph Curry to 4 for 14 from three. They really did a pretty decent job, and Rudy Gobert, as long as the Jazz stay in half court, they're able to do that pretty well. They're also going to have to stop the Grizzlies in transition as best they can. The Grizzlies are incredible at getting turnovers and going in transition, and Utah's got to be better in transition as best they can. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Jazz start trying to get the ball out of Ja Morant's hands before he's even, you know, into their sets and things like that. That's one of the things I wouldn't be surprised to see.
No, and I think everything that you just said is very fair. And I'm really interested in seeing how the Grizzlies attack Mitchell in a similar fashion, you know, and I think that one of the things that folks forget, so much focus is put on what the Utah Jazz do on the perimeter. And obviously in terms of combining amount of shots with percentage, they're the highest volume scoring 3-point team in the NBA. They're also really damn good at the pick and roll. If I remember correctly, they're in the top two or even one in terms of pick and roll offense. Rudy Gobert is phenomenal at that. And when it's a Gobert Mitchell pick and roll, you have a lot of choices to make if you're a defender or a defensive twosome or a rotation group, and none of them are good. It's tough.
That's the tough thing. And that's what makes the Jazz offense pretty potent, is because let's say you do try to get the ball out of Donovan Mitchell's hands.
Sure.
Well, now you've got, he's going to swing it to Mike Conley, and good luck, because now you've probably got a weaker defender guarding Conley, and Conley still got it. And I did want to mention, like, last year, as much as Conley struggled, he really kind of found his groove this season. I think last season he was really trying to prove, because he knew that the Jazz had given up a pretty good amount of things to get him. I think he really wanted to prove he was worth it. And I think he got in his own head a little bit. And I think it was harder for him to leave Memphis than maybe we all thought. And this year he really settled into kind of playing off of Donovan Mitchell, letting Donovan Mitchell be that main point of attack and then playing off of that. So when you send your Dylan Brooks and your double teams, you just give the ball to Conley and he, you know, he can either hit that three. He shot the three incredibly this year. And he's also runs that secondary pick and roll. And it's really a perfect role for him to kind of, as he kind of is in the twilight of his career a little bit, it's a really nice role he's found.
Yeah, we still love Mike Conley. He's just a remarkable person. As good of a basketball player as he is, he's a better person.
Oh, for
and
sure.
He's done phenomenal work in Memphis. I know he's done some of that in Utah as well, and it's really cool to see him find his footing. Obviously, we hope he finds it a little less effectively these next few games, but chances are he's going to continue to be good because he's been good all season. We're finishing up here with James Hansen at Hansen James of SLC Dunk, the Utah Jazz SB Nation team blog here on GBB Live. I'll get you out of here on this, James. The GBB Live question of the day: how many more games will the Memphis Grizzlies win in this series with the Utah Jazz? The four options for our voters were 0. So that would mean obviously a Jazz win in 5 games. 1, which would mean Jazz in 6. 2, which would mean Jazz in 7. And then, of course, 3, if the Grizzlies somehow were able to win 3 more games, that would be one of the more stunning upsets in recent memory if Memphis was able to knock the Jazz out of the playoffs. Of course, this was a Grizzlies fan base poll. So 25% of the fan base said 3. But I'm proud of Grizzlies fans because that actually came in 3rd. 0.
Oh, sorry. I retweeted it.
That's okay. No, it's okay. I think that helped make it more balanced. Mm. So I think that may help to make it more balanced. Only 14% of fans think that they're not going to win another game, which I would agree with. 25% said they're going to win 3 and win the series, which I would think it's probably safe to say that's the Grizzlies fans. The second place vote getter was 2 games winning. So that would make it a Utah in 7 kind of series. The winner, 33.7% of the vote, goes to 1 more game that Memphis will win. And that's what I voted for, James. I think the Grizzlies will win 1 of these 2 in Memphis, probably game 3. I think that just makes the most sense. They'll ride that wave of energy. Jazz will get hot. And I think I could see the Jazz winning 3 straight after Memphis wins game 3. I think that could certainly happen. That's where I'm at. I'm looking at 1 more win for Memphis. I predicted Utah in 6 going into the series, and I think that's where it's going to settle. So I said Memphis is going to win 1 more game in this series, and the Jazz will take it in 6. When you look at that poll, obviously you want 0, but it sounds like you agree that it's at least going to be 1. Did you agree with me that it was 1?
I voted 1. I did. I think they'll win 1 of these next 2 games. If they win game 3, I think you're right. If they're going to win 1, I think it's game 3. Because I think the Jazz are still figuring themselves out a little bit. You've still got Donovan Mitchell coming back from injury and looking a little bit tentative, although he moved better than I expected him to at times.
Agreed.
I think he's, you know, he had that one play at the end, and you know, I don't know if he everyone on Jazz Twitter was just worried, did he tweak his ankle? Is he okay? I wonder if he's just a little, he hasn't played in like 17 games. So I wonder if he's a little bit out of game shape a tiny bit. And so I wonder if he's still kind of working his way back, just game shape as well, you know? And so I think that if they're going to win 1, I think it's game 3, you know, and this is all based on if Donovan Mitchell's healthy too. If Donovan Mitchell's not healthy, then I think it's a 50-50. I think the Grizzlies can beat the Jazz if Donovan Mitchell's not quite there, but he looked solid to me in game 2. So I think the Grizzlies can definitely win 1. I expect them to win 1 more because there's going to be a game where they have their role players play really well, you know, and that's just very possible. And so I would predict 1. I think the poll is probably right.
I would agree. I think Jazz in 6 is a safe prediction. That's the thing about 7 game series, right? Almost always the better team wins because it's the way of the structure of the series. The first to get to 4, usually the better team does that. Doesn't always work out that way. I'm sure the specter of the 2011 Spurs, who spoiler alert, lost to the Memphis Grizzlies in a 1-8 matchup, I'm sure that probably makes some Utah fans lose sleep at night. But Memphis doesn't have a Shane Battier. Memphis doesn't have, you know, they have Ja Morant, but, you know, Zach Randolph, the whole spirit and vibe of that was a little bit different. So, and the Spurs were old, right? And again, the Jazz aren't young.
Jazz are pretty old. Right. Outside of Mitchell.
Right. But I think Mitchell's the key. And you alluded to it, and I agree with you. If Mitchell is not 100%, if Mitchell struggles in these games, because he's going to get jumped on, like in terms of he's going to get boot, he's going to get Dylan Brooks treatment in Memphis. If he can't be that scorer that he was in game two, then the Grizzlies could win both of these games. I think that's very possible. I just, you know, I've watched Donovan Mitchell play a decent amount of basketball, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to have at least one good game in Memphis. Utah will get home court back, and things will kind of work themselves out from there. But it's going to be awesome to see playoff basketball back in Memphis. It's been a wonderful conversation with you, James. Thank you so much for taking the time. It's much appreciated. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the basketball. The playoffs have been awesome so far, and we'll have to have you back on down the road.
You bet. Anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you again. That was James Hansen at Hansen James on Twitter. Make sure you're following him and the great group at SLC Dunk. They do fantastic work on the Utah Jazz for SB Nation. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at GBB Live. You can follow me if you wish at Joe Mullinax, and you can follow the blog that I am fortunate enough to be the site manager of, SB Nation's Grizzly Bear Blues, at SBN Grizzlies. Subscribe, rate, review to the GBB Podcast Network. We're on Stitcher, we're on Spotify, we're on iTunes, Google, iHeart, basically anywhere that you can get a podcast, you can subscribe. And you can get, of course, this flagship show that I've been doing for way too long, 8 years now, GBB Live. You can get the Core Four. You can get 3 and D. You can get Starting Five. Very proud of the work that we do over at GBB. Make us a part of your Memphis Grizzlies playoff and beyond picture. So, again, for James, thanks again to him. I'm Joe Mullinax. Grind forth, Grizz Nation. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live.